guys, I see you're all just joining here. And I know some of you are coming from all over the world, so welcome to you guys today. Excited to be able to share this training with you, because a lot of you are facing something new and big and scary. And you're like, well, how do I think about this? I'm in the deep end of the life, I'm in the deep end of the pool, and I just don't know how to think about this. During this session, we're going to discover how to stop emotionally thrashing about so you can see God and let Him help you. Also, how to understand how stress is affecting you and why God created and allows it. You'll gain insight into the automatic responses of a drowning person and when we're emotionally drowning, how this information and how these responses can help. We'll learn how to establish a godly focal point, the seven ways God answers prayer, how to align ourselves with God's goals, the six antidepressant questions God provides for our peace and joy during stretching seasons, how God defines success and why it's so far superior, easier, and better than Webster's definition, perspective transforming insights that will change how you deal with stress, fear, and confusion from this day forward, and how to partner with God for this particular season, project, or idea, or for all of those that come in the future. Okay, so first of all, you can't learn to swim until you stop thrashing about. You've been thrown into the deep end of the pool in some particular way. You have a new prognosis, possibly. Maybe you just lost a loved one. Maybe you just received bad news about your job. Or maybe you have a new idea or something that God's putting in your heart that He wants you to start doing. Whatever it is, you feel over your head. You feel like, I don't even know how to do this. I don't know what to think about. I don't know how to get out from under the terrifying feelings that I'm feeling right now. This is so beyond my ability. Think about learning how to swim. When we get thrown into the deep end of the pool, we are thrashing about, trying to keep our head above water, trying to just survive it. What we fail to recognize is that God not only is the one who allowed us to be thrown into the pool or threw us in Himself, but He's also the good Father who's in the pool waiting to catch us, waiting to receive us. It is the number one thing that we do wrong when we're in this situation, to blame God, to accuse God, to push God away, to run from God, to try to do it without God. Because honestly, He knows that we can't. He knows that we are completely incapable of handling this without Him. Not only did He allow us to be in this situation that you're in today, but He knew you would be there, and He jumped in the water ahead of you, and He is helping you to be able to do this for His glory, for His honor, and He has got you. You're safe. It's okay. So right now, just take a really deep breath in and say, I'm here. I'm in the deep end of the pool. And breathe it out and say, God's got me. God's got me. God's got me. Take a deep breath in and say, it's true. I'm here in the deep end of the pool. And breathe out and say, God's got me. God's got me. God's got me. God created our minds in such an amazing way. He knew that we would face stressful situations, and so He created our brains to be able to handle it, to be able to process it. There's two kinds of stress. Let's first talk about bad stress. Bad stress is when we feel like we're in the deep end of the pool drowning. That's really a bad kind of stress. We feel like we're drowning. We can't breathe. We can't think. We can't release. We can't settle down. We're just anxious. This kind of stress actually restricts our blood flow. It results in respiratory difficulties. It creates acid in the digestive system and can lead to ulcers. And it affects muscle function and more. Whereas good stress. I'm in the deep end of the pool. This is a place where I have never been before. I don't know how to do anything here, but God is with me. This kind of stress regulates blood flow, increases oxygen to the brain and muscles, and improves heart health. I want you to think about your brain for just a minute by doing a little exercise with me. Now, if you're driving, you're not going to be able to do this, but everybody else should be able to do this if you can. Just sit and lift your right foot straight up into the air right now. Just lift your right foot up in the air and start making clockwise circles with your right foot. Okay, so you're making little clockwise circles with your right foot. Now, take your left hand up into the air and draw the number 6. What is your foot doing? It turned around, right? It was making clockwise circles, but as soon as your left hand created the number 6 in the air, your right foot had to follow suit and all of a sudden was going counterclockwise to match the action of your left hand. The reality is that God has created us so uniquely and so amazingly. He looks forward to helping us when we're in these bad stress situations. The sooner we can release this to Him and recognize that He's there with us and that we're okay, the sooner we can get to that good stress point. It's incredibly amazing how the body handles a drowning situation. In lifeguard training, they show exactly what a person does when they're drowning. I mean, now someone could be knocked out and not be able to do this, of course, but if someone is awake and drowning, they're going to do 5 things. First of all, they're going to turn their body toward the shore. Now, just like your right foot changed directions as soon as your left hand started making that 6, when you begin to drown, your body will automatically look to find the shore. Where is the closest help? If you're out too deep and there's a boat, your body will turn toward the boat. It's incredible. The mind is so amazing. God built us so incredibly. Number 2, the mouth will always reach for water level. The head is going to automatically tilt back because that takes the mouth to a higher level, but also allows the eyes to see. The body will become vertical instead of going into a flotation position, which you would think someone who knew how to swim or someone who doesn't even know how to swim, why not go into a float position? But you won't. When you're drowning, the body stays vertical. And there's a climbing ladder motion with your hands. Think about that for just a moment. When I pray, my face turns toward God. My lips go toward the surface of the earth and reach into heaven. My head is tilted back. My body is vertical and my arms are raised toward heaven. Isn't this incredible that the exact drowning position we have when we're drowning in water is the position of the sacrifice of praise? That's exactly where we're supposed to go. Anytime we feel like we're drowning emotionally, relationally, financially, in any way, just kick into the reality that, yes, it does feel like I'm drowning. And yes, God has made a way for me to live through this. I'd like to introduce you to an exercise that I like to do to remind us how easy it is for us to get unstuck when we feel really stuck, focused on something that's over our heads. So first of all, imagine yourself holding a newspaper and it's up in front of your face and all you can see is the newspaper because that's what's in front of your face. But now if you imagine holding the newspaper kind of like it's a book in front of your face, so just do this with me. Put your hands in front of your face and completely block your view. But when we fold our hands together, we have the ability to see everything around us, all that God is doing, while still having this really uncomfortable, you know, could be bad stress, but also could be God's good stress right here in front of us. So the key is to focus on Jesus. And when you feel that something else is getting in the way of your focusing on Him, just remember to take that to Him in prayer. That's the whole process. That's exactly what we're supposed to do. God loves you so much. Jesus cares for you so much. And He wants actually for us to experience every deep end of life experience with Him. Cuddled close to His chest, looking in His eyes, trusting Him for everything we need. Hebrews 11:6 says, "For without faith, it is impossible to please God. In order to please God, you must believe He exists and is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him." The next thing I want to address is how God heals. Because what we all want is we want Him to heal us immediately, like in the moment, just this instantaneous, miraculous healing. And when we're thrown in the deep end of life, what we want is we want all the answers right now. We want to know exactly what to do, exactly how to do it, where the money's coming from, where the ability to handle this new thing is coming from, how we're going to get through this. God is so faithful. He has shown us in Scripture the different ways that He heals. So there's 4 methods and 3 ways. So I'll just go through them real quick. The first way is self-directed. That's when I have a cold or I am coming down with the chills and I go take a bunch of vitamin C, eat some garlic, I drink a lot of water and rest. That's self-directed healing. And a lot of times that's all it takes. The second one is doctor-driven. Doctor-driven healing is when it's beyond that. For example, just last night, my son-in-law was rushed to the hospital with an anaphylactic reaction, and they needed to treat him at the hospital or he would die. This is a doctor-driven response, and God heals so many of us through this way. The next one is sleep-induced, and this is actually the permanent one. This is the one where the sickness takes us to death, and then we wake up in heaven. And Jesus talked about that in the Bible, how we fall asleep, and then we wake up with Him in glory. Sleep-induced is the one we maybe least want, because this means we leave all of our loved ones here. But the reality is that it's a full healing, and once we're in heaven, there's no more sadness, no more sickness, no more pain. Final one, of course, is the miraculous one, and this is the one we all want. We all want God to intervene in the moment, right now, take care of us exactly right now, the way we want, the way we would appreciate, the way we expect or hope. But there are four ways that God intervenes, and some of them take some time. A lot of them take a lot of energy, and maybe even money, and patience, and processes. If you have a bad break, you're going to have to go to therapy, and it's going to take a long time to heal. These are all ways that God heals, and it's so beautiful to see that all of them are shown in the Bible. These are the four methods God uses to heal, and all of them are shown in the Bible, but there's also three ways God heals. These are just taken from Jesus' life and times on the earth. First one is instant and complete. At one point, He heals a blind man. He just says, "You are healed," and he's healed. Just instantly, he can see everything perfectly. The second way is gradual. Sometimes when Jesus was dealing with blind men, He would spit in some dirt, make some clay, and put it on their eyes. And one time He even said to the man, how are things looking now? And the man said, "Well, you know, I can see men, but they're walking around like tree trunks." And Jesus was like, "Okay, we're not quite done yet." He does another step, and then the man's fully healed. The third way is healing that requires personal action. There's a story in the Bible about Jesus saying to a blind man, "You'll be healed as soon as you go and you dunk in the water over there." Why does God do this? Why are there four methods and three ways that God heals instead of allowing healing to come instantaneously and completely? It's all about dependence, you guys. God is teaching us to depend on Him. This is what the whole process of our life on earth here is for, is to become totally dependent on Him. Why doesn't God just immediately heal? Why are there four methods and three ways? The only way that would make sense to us is that if He instantly, miraculously healed us every time we asked. That is sometimes what He does. But more frequently, He has us walk this out. He throws us in the deep end of the pool, or allows us to be thrown in the deep of the pool. He's there in the deep end of the pool waiting for us, and He's just wondering how long until you're going to do this my way, until you're going to allow me to carry you through this struggle and this challenge and this trial that you're going through, this confusion. You think of Peter walking on the water. As long as his eyes were on Jesus, he was walking on the water. But as soon as he looked at the waves, then he was sinking down into the water, but also sinking down into his own terror and anxiety, bad stress. It is exactly the same with us. The goal of God's heart is to teach us to be fully dependent on Him. It's exactly opposite of what a parent would teach a child. We come into the world knowing nothing, being totally dependent on our parents. And our human parents, their goal, their job, their responsibility is to raise us from the point of complete dependence to the point of complete independence, where should we die, should they be completely on their own, they would be able to take care of themselves, to provide for themselves and their families, to be responsible adults, to be responsive to God. All of those things are the responsibility of human parents. But if you think of it, God's job is just the opposite. When Adam and Eve were in the garden, they knew Him, they walked with Him, they depended on Him for everything. They knew that He was the source of everything they had. Whereas when we come into the world, we come into the world in sin. It's exactly the opposite. We come into the world separated from God by sin. God's job, God's role, God's responsibility is to teach us total dependence. So we come in completely independent of God, and His goal is to lead us to complete dependence. Now, if we go back and we ask the same question, why doesn't God always miraculously heal us completely instantly in the moment we ask for help? And it's because He is teaching us dependence. And dependence requires relationship. He's not a to-do list that we check off and we're done and we go on with the day. He's a relationship that we have, that we love, that we trust, that we depend on more and more. If you have found yourself in the deep end of pools more and more lately, believe me, He loves you. He's just trusting you more and more to come to Him more quickly. This is another situation where he wants you to come to him, and he's asking how long until you let me carry this burden, carry you through this situation. I love to use the analogy of a game show because this is how it feels when we don't know what to do. You're in this game show and you're blindfolded and you're taken out onto the stage and everybody's clapping and cheering for you. And then you find out what the game is. On one side of the stage, there's a pile of $100 bills. On the other side of the stage, there is a pile of $1 bills. You're given a bucket and you have 1 minute. You can keep everything you can get in your bucket in 1 minute, but you're blindfolded and you don't know which pile has which in it. You have basically three choices. You can turn to your right and focus your whole minute on that pile, and if you get done, turn to your left. Or you can turn to your left, focus your whole minute on that pile, and if you get done, turn to your right. Or you can try to estimate in your mind what is 30 seconds, 30 seconds, and you can get the most you can from each pile in 30 seconds, then you are sure in that situation that you're going to have the best possible outcome while you're blindfolded. When we're in the deep end of a pool, it's like we're blindfolded. We don't know. Our body instinctively turns to the closest shore, but we don't really know what to do other than to dog paddle. You know, our arms are going up. Remember that the auto response of a drowning person is head and eyes up toward shore. Arms reaching up. And this is what we do when we're in the deep end of the pool. When we don't know what to do, we reach up toward God and we say, God, help me know what to do. In the meantime, until he shows you what to do, it's okay. You know what to do. You've got choices in front of you. You're just going to make the best choice you can. You're going to just walk forward making the best choice you can. But this is a totally different situation than being terrified that you're going to make the wrong choice. Eyes on Jesus, making the best choice you can. This is what God has given us. When I was in fourth grade, a race car driver came and spoke to my class at school. He talked about being in a terrible crash. His car burst into flames and he couldn't get out. He said, when you're a race car driver, and you're in this vehicle going so fast around this track, what you tend to do is when you feel your car go into a skid, is you tend to look at the wall that's coming straight at you. Instead, what you need to do is look where you want the car to go. He said, where you focus on is where you go. His mistake that day was that he focused on the wall that he didn't want to hit because it was coming straight at him and he didn't want to hit it. But that's all he could see. It's like, again, you know, your hands in front of your face or newspaper in front of your face, drowning. You just don't know what to do. And he said what he learned is that when you're in that situation, you take your eyes off of what you don't want to happen and you put your eyes on to where you need to go. Our eyes are always supposed to be on Jesus. And if that's the only thing you take from today's webinar, that's the most important thing for you to take. Eyes on Jesus. Fully watching him at all times, Peter walking on the water, it is no different for you. When you are in resonance with who you are, you're making progress, but when there's a dissonance there's no progress. If you think of yourself in the deep end of the pool, every moment you waste, and I'm just going to say waste, every moment you waste trying to save yourself, trying to figure out which pile is the $100 bills, instead of just recognizing that you don't know. Trying to look at the wall so you cannot hit the wall. Anytime that you have dissonance from what God is calling for you to do, instead of resonance with what he has built into you already, into your DNA. You know, when he strung you together, he strung together 3 billion base pair of DNA, and he did it in a particular way. You are uniquely you. And as long as you're resonating with how he created you, you're going to see progress. But as long as you're not, as long as you're fighting and you're clawing and you're grasping and you're looking where you don't want to go and you're all consumed with this thing or you're letting this thing consume you, you're going to be in dissonance and you're not going to be making progress towards God's goals. Instead, you're going to feel all of that negative, bad stress and have those results. I'd like to teach you 6 antidepressant questions that God has used so often in my life to take me from being very introspective to very God perspective, because the reality is when I feel over my head, I want to figure it out. I want to make this feeling go away as quickly as possible. Whereas God is wanting me to not worry so much about making this go away as focus on getting closer to Him. What is He trying to teach me here? What is He trying to do here? Where is He helping me here? Of course, I'm all focused on what He's not doing, but He wants me to focus on what He is doing. The first antidepressant question is my focus on my situation? Think of Peter on the water. Is my focus on the waves? Question number two, is my concern about how I'll look to others or even how this will affect God's reputation? So many times I would be at perfect peace in whatever the situation is, except that it makes me look really bad or it makes God look bad. I mean, it just is, it seems to me like to be a bad reflection of God because I'm not perfect, because I'm broken, because I'm totally clueless what to do here, because I'm not perfectly healed in the moment, because I'm not a shining example of God's healing power or whatever. But the reality is that's the wrong question. Antidepressant question number three, is the reward I'm seeking immediate or eternal? And by the way, you guys, there's a download you can have afterwards that has these antidepressant questions in it, and it also has the Perspective Transformation Worksheet, which I'm going to introduce to you in a few minutes, which will help you see this more clearly. But the question is a good question. Am I seeking my immediate comfort, or am I seeking God's eternal perspective on this? Where's my focus? Antidepressant question number four, are my pronouns personal or all about God? Just listen to how you're praying. God, may your kingdom come and your will be done in my life right now as it is in heaven. Or is it, God, help me, this is terrible. This looks awful. This is all about me and this feels really bad about me. What are your pronouns? Antidepressant question number five. Am I looking at what is left to be done? What traumas potentially lie ahead of me? Because, you guys, there is absolutely no way for us to know what is going to happen next. God can literally save you in a moment. I just yesterday heard the story, firsthand story, of a woman whose child drowned. She was hearing him play behind her, and she looked back and found that instead of him playing behind her, it was actually the wind moving the blinds. He wasn't there. When she got out to the pool, he was dead. He was laying arms straight out to the side, eyes open. There was no reason to call for an ambulance. He was dead. God had been calling her and her husband. She realized that she was hopeless without God. There was no hope. So she cried out to God. And within moments, this little boy, who's now in his teens, coughed, spat, and came back to life. When we focus on the horrible future that we have, the traumas that potentially lay ahead of us, instead of resting in the moment of God's reality right now here, that He is here with me in the pool, He's taking care of me, He's got me, He's got everything about me. When we're all focused on the terror of what might be coming, we cannot appreciate what He's doing for us in the moment. We really don't know what's coming. We don't. We maybe have an idea of what might come, and that's where all the fear is, but honestly, in this moment, that's not happening to you. So it's a great question to ask. The last one is my concern based on circumstantial evidence or godly truth? There's even a verse in the Bible that says that we as Christians do not mourn as the world mourns. We don't grieve as the world grieves. Why not? Because we know that when somebody or when we fall asleep, we go to heaven. Death is a mercy. For a believer, death is a good thing. It's a gift from God. And that's the godly truth of it. The circumstantial evidence is that this is horrible. This is a terrible loss that cannot be consoled. But the godly truth of it is that no matter what we're going through, God says clearly in James that He's bringing it for good. So have joy. Rejoice. God's got this. I want to go back and address for just a moment the one about us feeling like we're being a bad example, like God's reputation is at stake because I look lousy here. The way that we define success is that it's just perfect. I mean, it's like this perfect straight line from where we are to where we're going, and it's all beautiful and perfect. But a success from God's eyes is simply that we walk with Him, trusting Him through every situation. Remember, faith is believing that God exists and that He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. In the moment, whatever the moment looks like, following God, trusting God, is what makes God happy, what God wants, actually what makes God look good. We only want to look good because we're Pharisees, and that's how Pharisees are. We want to look good and feel good and have everything all together. But a true Christian response is to walk through the hideousness of life with God, trusting Him. I mean, don't you think Jesus felt bad when He had to have the other guy carry the cross? I mean, yeah, he's beaten up and everything, but he's God. So why can't He carry His own cross? I mean, that's ridiculous. How about when He didn't have anywhere to sleep and He had a stone for His pillow? Where was God that night? How about all the other times in His life or the disciples' lives? Where's God when we're thrown in jail? Where's God when we're being beaten? Where's God when we're being crucified upside down? Where's God when all of this is happening? God's perspective of success is not like Webster's. Webster's definition of success is the accomplishment of an aim or purpose. God's definition of success is that He can actually say to me, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." That He can say to you, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." Not because you got it perfect, not because you avoided every appearance of something not perfect, but because you trusted God through everything that He was doing for you. The whole definition of success from God's perspective is that He gets to say to you, "Well done, good and faithful servant." You know, I've managed a lot of people, and even in my relationship with Dave and my kids, my desire, the way God built me, is to be a cheerleader. I love to come alongside and to cheer people on and to say, "Yeah, great, good job, keep going, good job," and to even help, provide help where I can. And this is how I'm built. I'm built in the image of God. I'm built to say to you, "Well done, look at you, go, go, go." We have this misled perspective that that can only happen from God or from each other when everything's perfect and in line, and that's just not true. And all you have to do is think back to a time when you walked next to somebody who was going through a difficult challenge, and you came along them and said, "You are doing great. Your faith is inspiring to me." And I just said this to somebody 2 days ago. Your faith inspires me. Your story inspires me. How you hold on to God through this inspires me. The heroes in my life are not the people whose lives always look all together and all perfect and all, you know, above any kind of trouble. Those people don't seem real to me. The people who are my heroes, my heroines, they're the ones who battle migraine headaches all the time, their whole life, and still serve Jesus, love Him, love others, are faithful to Him, continue to trust Him. The parents of handicapped children and the handicapped people I know as adults who love God, serve Him, trust Him, yield themselves to His choices for their lives. These are my heroes and heroines. And why don't you think that that could be true for you? Why don't I think that could be true for me? A heroine is someone who God says, every night when He tucks me into bed, I ask Him, "Is it okay? Are we okay?" And some nights He says, "Yeah, we're good. Go to sleep." And other nights He says, "Let's talk about a few things. Try again tomorrow. We'll go at it again." And "well done" doesn't even have anything to do with my sinlessness on my own. I can't be sinless on my own. I can't. My righteousness is filthy rags. That's what God says. Our righteousness is filthy rags. It is God who sent Jesus to die on the cross for our sins, and His blood covers every transgression, and His love covers a multitude of my sins and yours. And it is because of this and because of His Holy Spirit that dwells in us that we can live this amazing flow through life for His glory and His honor. And at the end of a day or at the end of a life, receives a well done, my good and faithful servant, not because of what we've done, but because of what we've allowed God to do through us. What a mercy, what grace, what joy, what hope. As you're going through this deep end of the pool circumstances, the deep end of the life where you are right now, consider the dolphin way of praying. So dolphins are water dwellers, but air breathers. They love to come up for air, and not only love to, they have to. They have to come up for air because otherwise they're going to drown. We are earth dwellers and prayer breathers. We love to talk to God in prayer, but we have to. Whenever we need oxygen, whenever we need spiritual oxygen, we have got to go up for air through prayer. And in doing so, we leave the world below. We leave the circumstances below. And we get to spend these moments in the air, in prayer, in heaven with God. Ephesians 2:4 says that we are seated in the heavenlies with Christ Jesus right now, this moment. It's our choice if we want to be there, if we want to experience that, or if we only want to experience the waves. King David was such a great example of a prayer warrior, because he just loved God so much, and he only just wanted to do what God wanted him to do, and he was a total failure. He was an adulterer, a murderer. He wasn't a great dad, and yet he was a passionate man toward God, and God loved him. God loved his heart so much that he actually compared all the other kings to him all the time. Whenever a king is mentioned in the New Testament after David, of course it was just Saul before him, but after David, all they were always compared to him. This was a great king. Yeah, but he still wasn't as good as my servant David. This was a terrible king, nothing like my servant David. How did he become so God's favorite? And the reason is because he just kept running every emotion to God. He just kept running and running back to God, back to God, back to God, back to God, no matter what it was. When he was terrified, he would run to God. And that is exactly our job. That's our role here. I have this Address Your Stress Prayer of Humility. I learned it years ago when I had Girls Club in my home, and I would have these situations where I would be in my kitchen with 11 or 12 or 13 young girls. These girls started with me when they were 11 years old and went till they were 18 years old. But a lot of times by the time they were 14, 15, they were out of the club. So these were young girls making meals for families who would come, pick them up, and take them home and eat them that night. So they had to be edible. These girls didn't know how to cook. Most of them couldn't do anything. They didn't have a clue. Some of them did, but most of them didn't. So I would be in the kitchen with all of these girls trying to make meals that would be edible for eating 1.5 hours from right now. Or 20 minutes right now. Somebody would be goofing off or doing something obnoxious. You know how young girls can get. And I would run out of patience. I would literally be ready to bite their heads off. But I knew that God had called me to this ministry, and I knew that He wasn't ready to bite their heads off. So I would turn around, I would face the cupboard, I would face the refrigerator, whatever, and I would just say, God, I don't have any whatever, love, patience, whatever, right now for so-and-so, but You have plenty, so please flow some of Yours to me and through me right now. And God would always do it. He didn't always do it beautifully. I like to tell the story of the day where I had just prayed that prayer. I turned around, and one of the girls dumped over a whole 9x13 pan of dessert upside down on the floor. Now, was that what I was asking for? Was I asking for additional trauma and stress in the kitchen? No, I was not asking for that. But I tell you what, it totally diffused my anxiety. And I almost had to laugh, like, oh God, that is hilarious. Really, this is how you're going to do it? But the reality was, I was just about ready to actually inflict an emotional, spiritual wound onto one of his kids. And instead, he let us waste a little bit of groceries. A few minutes, and I was able to model grace and joy in that moment. Which is of the more value, you guys? Because we get this all mixed up. We get this all mixed up that the value is in the healing, the value is in the answer, the value is in the funding, the value is in the support, the value is in knowing what's coming next, the value is in me feeling very perfect and having everything all together. That's not how God sees it. Vibrations never lie. What if on that day in the kitchen, instead of turning around and begging God for mercy right now for me, so I could have grace to these girls? What if I had just decided to tough it out, to proudly, bravely tough it out without Him? Well, do you think that when that pan turned upside down, I would have been in a better situation or a worse situation? Because the pan was going to flip either way. It was God actually calling me in advance to yield myself to Him so that I could be in resonance with Him when the next bad thing happened. This whole process, this whole life, you guys, is about us coming into one-on-one relationship with God. He can use us. He can flow His love to us and through us for His glory and honor. No matter how much you try to hold it together on your own, your vibrations never lie. You are an electrical being. If I were to take a brick and stick it up against a live outlet, nothing would happen. But if I stick you against a live outlet, a live wire with juice going through it, you're going to be electrocuted because you are body electric. You are body electric and your vibrations never lie. No matter how well you think you're doing with it, no matter how much you're toughing it out on your own and going to get through this, the only way to make this truly work for God, for you, and for everyone around you is to yield completely to God where He can bring you to peace. He can actually bring you to peace. It's such an amazing reality that God can bring you to peace. I have this saying, it's kind of funny, but it's so true. I'd be way more faithful if it didn't feel so irresponsible. Being faithful to God and actually literally trusting Him in the deep end of life looks and feels irresponsible. Because since the time we were born, we've been taught that it's our responsibility. And it is. It is. It's my responsibility. It's your responsibility. But the responsibility ends, you guys. It begins, it ends with the choice of where to focus our attention, where our focal point is going to be. Feeling responsible looks like focusing on the problem until it is solved. True responsibility looks like focusing on God until He helps us understand how to solve the problem. It's a way different way of living. I love Evelyn Christensen's book, Lord Change Me. It's really old, but it is a fantastic book. I've been through it multiple times on my own, plus have taken other women's Bible study groups through it multiple times because it is just so pivotal. What we can see of our own selves and what others can see of us is like the tip of an iceberg. But the bottom of the iceberg is where everything that matters really happens. The tip of the iceberg is just what's showing at the moment. So as long as everything's peaceful and calm, people can measure us and, you know, check what we're doing and see how it's looking to them and all of that. But under the surface, the emotions lie, the intuition lies, all of the things that are going to matter truly lie under the surface. And these don't come out until moments of crisis. When we're facing a deep end of the pool situation, God calls us to Him because He's got the better perspective. I love the analogy of the helicopter pilot. The helicopter pilot, especially a traffic cam, he's up above and he can see what's coming ahead of you because he has an aerial view and he can see whether there's going to be trouble or not. He can help you. He can say, there's a crash at this particular location. If you get off at this exit, you'll be able to go around it. But if you don't listen to the helicopter pilot, if you don't listen to the sky cam, if you don't check your nav, it's not going to be helpful to you. You're not going to know. Now, some people say, God's a bad dad because every time I pray for patience, I get socked. Well, that'd be like me in the kitchen that day say, God's a bad dad because when I asked Him for help with that girl, He allowed another girl to dump a dessert over on the ground. No, it was a good dad because by the time I turned around, He had infused me with a heavenly or spiritual perspective that allowed me to tackle the next situation with grace. God is such a good Father and He has a perfect perspective, and that's the perspective that He wants us to have at all times. How do we get that? We get it by focusing on Him, not on our circumstances, on Him. Barometric pressure is something that indicates what's coming. If it's high pressure, it's a sunny day. If it's low pressure, it's going to be clouds. And we can kind of see that in our own lives too. Colossians 3:15 is my barometer. This is my life barometer. It says, let the peace from Christ or the soul harmony which comes from Christ rule or act as umpire continually in your hearts, deciding and settling with finality all questions that arise in your minds in that peaceful state to which as members of Christ's one body you were called to live and be thankful, be appreciative, give praise to God always. This peace barometer is so critical because anytime that I feel my peace being shaken, anytime that I feel my shoelaces of my spiritual armor being untied and I might trip, all I have to do is to run to Jesus. Act as umpire for me. What's going on here? Should I be upset? Should I be fearful? Should I be angry? Because sometimes that would be the right, exactly correct response. For example, when I'm standing on a railroad track and I hear the train coming, I think Jesus would say, get off the train track. Have a little cautionary fear here. When I think about God and his judgment of my life without Jesus, that would be terrifying. I can't possibly go before God without Jesus. I am not worthy. I am so broken. I am so sinful. It is only because of the blood of Jesus Christ that I dare to come into the presence of God. But because of the blood of Christ, I can come right in. Ephesians 2:4, I can sit with him in the heavenlies. Mercy, grace, amazing grace. I want to quickly here at the end introduce you to the Perspective Transformation Worksheet that you're going to get as soon as we're done with this here today. This really has helped me to clarify because sometimes I cannot imagine God saying no to me. On the left-hand side, I write down what my need is, what my request is, what my vision or dream is. On the middle left section, I write yes and now, circle those things, and on the middle left section, I circle later and no. There are several letters and descriptions here. Dollar signs mean if God says yes now, you get the answer to your prayer right now in this moment, would I become a more generous person or a less generous person? Okay, well, let's say that I'm asking God for funds to help with my friends in Africa. Let's say, and this actually happened, Sam called and he said, Mom, pray with me. The babies are crying. There is no milk. In other words, we're starving. So I bring this request to God. I write it on the needs side. Sam needs food. Sam needs funds. All right, now I say, God, if you answer me yes right now, will this make me a more generous person? And the answer is yes. If you give me funds right now to send to Sam, absolutely, this will make me a more generous person. So yes, yes and now. If you give me funds to send to Sam right now, will this make me more content? Absolutely, it will make me more content. Will it make me more diligent? Maybe not. Will it make me more faithful? I don't know, maybe not. Will it increase my goodness? Well, I'd sure get to show goodness, so yes. Will it increase my humility? Yeah, because if you give it to me right now, and I get to send it, I would know it was from you, and I would get to share it, and yes, I would be grateful for that. Would it increase my kindness? Well, I'd sure get to show kindness, yes. Will it increase my joy exponentially? Yes. Will it increase my knowledge? I guess my knowledge of first-hand experience of a miracle, yes. Will it increase my love? I don't know if it would increase my love. I've got the love whether you give me the money or not. I guess maybe I would love you more if you gave me the funds right now. I would surely be grateful. Gentleness, I don't know, peacefulness. Yeah, I'd probably be more at peace if you gave it to me right now. I could send it right now. Self-control, maybe not that. Patience, definitely not if you gave it to me right now. Purity, nope. Forgiveness, nope. Wisdom, nope. Honesty. I guess if you gave me money that I was supposed to send to Sam and I used it for something else, I would be dishonest. So if I sent it to Sam right now, I'd be honest. Yes, okay, great. I'm done with the left hand. Now I move to the right hand side. The results if the answer is later or no. Would it be generosity? No, I wouldn't be able to do that right now, so I couldn't. Contentment. I would have to learn contentment because the babies are starving. I would have to learn diligence. Yes, in prayer. Oh my goodness, I'd be driven to prayer more than ever. And as the case was, I was. Faithfulness. I would have to be faithful until you answered this prayer. Yes, it would drive me to more faithfulness. Goodness. I don't know about that. Humility. Yeah, I can't do a thing about this, and I want to, God. I want to. I can't do a thing about this. Kindness. I don't know. Joy. Yeah. How in the world to experience joy here in the waiting? Yeah, it would increase my joy. Knowledge. Yeah, knowledge that even if you say no and wait, that you're still God and that I can still trust you. Yeah, love. Yeah, and I can still love you more, God. Love you more because you got this. Somehow you got them, even when I can't provide for them. Gentleness. I don't know. Peace. Yeah, I'm going to have to depend on you for peace. And my peace is going to grow here. self-control. Yeah, my self-control, not to take out a loan and send them the money when you didn't ask me to do that, when you don't want me to do that. Patience, yeah, it's going to increase my patience. You bet it is. Purity, don't know. Forgiveness, I might have to forgive you for letting him get in this situation to begin with. So yeah, forgiveness. I'm not talking to God about that. Not Sam, but God, forgiving God. And I always find that that's who I'm really mad at the end. Wisdom. Yeah, wisdom, because what I really want to do is I really just want to solve it. And what you want me to do is you want me to trust you. Yeah, and that's wisdom. So honesty, yeah, honesty. Honesty before you, before myself, before Sam. I don't have the money to send right now, but what I can do is I can pray for you. The outcomes were diligent prayer, patience, a lot of peace, a lot of screaming, a lot of hollering, and come to peace, and God taught me some lessons about waiting there. And the outcome was God provided in a different way. God provided. Sam got money. They got food. They didn't starve to death. And God is still God. Because what we're going to learn anytime we're willing to do this is that God always has good that he can bring no matter what. And we really don't know which way is better. You know, it's the old story that anything can be better or anything can be worse. Our job, our goal is to learn total dependence on God. God's goal is to teach us total dependence on him, and he's going to keep putting us in the deep end of the pool, in the deep end of life, because that's where we learn it the fastest. Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining me for this replay of the webinar, Over My Head. It's been really fun to be able to share this with you, and I'm excited that you were able to join us. Because of your attending live today at Blog Talk Radio, we were again the number one ranked show during this program. And I'm always so grateful to those of you who come Wednesday afternoons live and to those of you who listen around the web other times. Just know you're so welcome and we're so excited to have you too. But it's always just a blessing for those of you who come Wednesday afternoons to help us be able to get the visibility that comes with being number one on such a large platform like Blog Talk Radio. So thank you a ton. Also, just so you know, if you want to get the resources that were mentioned during this program, just go to marnie.com, M-A-R-N-I-E.com. And on the very front page there, you can see a bunch of freebies and you can get the godly wealth worksheet that we did at the very end, as well as the other things that were mentioned during the program, right there on the front page. Or if you go to find it fast, you'll see all kinds of stuff there. There are also some paid resources available, including the books that I've written and the mission vision training, all kinds of great stuff over there as well for you to check out. And of course, this program is sponsored by womenspeakers.com. So I hope that you will consider checking out womenspeakers.com if you are a planner looking for a speaker for an upcoming event, or if you are a Christian women speaker looking to be booked by planners who are seeking speakers just like you. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you next time. I hope you have a wonderful day, wonderful week, and God bless you as you go. Okay, bye-bye.